This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, HBO Max, the $4 billion streaming service, has finally arrived. Look out, Netflix, or says incoming AT&T CEO, don't worry about it.
Our goal, frankly, is not to be Netflix. Our goal is to be something different.
And who wants pizza? Papa John's CEO on delivering through the COVID-19 pandemic.
We knew the kind of performance we needed to deliver to make sure that we were able to meet the need for safe, high-quality food.
It's Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
First up on today's podcast, make room on your streaming schedule. The long-awaited HBO Max has finally arrived. AT&T, owner of HBO, expects 50 million customers on the platform by 2025, and they'll be paying $14.99 a month for 10,000 hours of content. That's a lot of episodes of Friends. And that is also substantially more expensive than Netflix, Apple TV, Disney Plus, and Hulu subscriptions. At AT&T's helm for the launch, John Stankey, a 30-year company veteran and soon-to-be successor to longtime CEO Randall Stephenson. Stankey takes over as chief executive of AT&T on July 1st. Here's Joe Kernan kicking things off with John Stankey this morning on Squawk Box.
John, thanks for coming on today. It's great to have you with us.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I know you have high hopes for HBO Max. We all know HBO. Obviously, it's synonymous with some of the greatest things ever on video. Obviously, Game of Thrones, Sopranos, etc. You want to take on Netflix, and I understand that. And I think that's interesting because I don't know whether it's true or not. But supposedly, someone said maybe we should have some kind of alliance with Netflix. Someone suggested that to you, and you said, we want to crush Netflix. So they're not even going to be frenemies. John, you want to replace Netflix or at least be a very potent competitor.
I think what you're referring to is maybe some what I would call not accurate reporting in the New York Times. Our belief is that there's going to be multiple streaming services moving forward. And I've been pretty consistent. I think if you look back over the last year in the public domain around my conversation that our goal, frankly, is not to be Netflix. Our goal is to be something different. And there are other streaming services that are starting to show up in the market that clearly hit different needs for the customer. HBO Max is going to have a unique focus and a unique position with the customer, and we're going to play our game. Our goal isn't to crush Netflix. Our goal is to make sure that we meet customer needs, that we engage them every day, that the household finds something worthwhile to spend time with us. And that's what we're going to stay focused on.
I guess it, I'm sorry, I didn't. So that was in the New York Times, but that was not accurate, according to you. So that's not a quote from you. That's interesting. Anyway, but I guess the reason I led with that, John, is that I think about Netflix and everything that's there, and from documentaries to movies to programming that they generate themselves, that is a big universe of things that they have. How will HBO Max, and I guess you just said you're not going to strive to be everything to all people, but you probably do need to add some things to the offering to make it so attractive that people have it in addition to the other streaming services.
Absolutely. Clearly, a customer in this dynamic of what's occurring is we're moving from kind of traditional media through the pay TV bundle and general entertainment content coming into the streaming realm has an incredible number of choices of what to do with their time. And then you go into all the dynamics in the digital environment about fragmented capabilities to go in and look at user-generated content, things like that. So there's no question there's more choice out there today than there ever has been. And that paradox of choice is what HBO Max needs to resolve. It needs to become the brand when a customer says, you know, I'm looking for something that meets this particular need of where I stand right now in my mood or my family situation. And that it's the first thing you think about that I can go and know I'm going to find something that's curated down to a meaningful selection of high quality, something that is going to hit the mark for me. And the consistency of that happening time and time again is clearly the hallmark we want for the brand and for the service. And that's what we believe we will focus on and we'll carry forward. And we've got such a talented team at WarnerMedia to be able to do that be able to curate in that kind of fashion. We're not just going to be doing it for with the demo that was served by HBO. Now we want to expand that out to the entire family.
And you point out that it's not much difference in price from what people are paying for now with HBO. So you have done some surveys, and what you saw, 1 out of 5 people might decide not to go with HBO Max, but it's not much of a difference between just converting what they have now into HBO Max. So you don't see any churn in that respect.
There is no difference. We're selling at that price today with just the HBO product, which is a product that has half as much content as what HBO Max, the new product, will offer on the market. So you get twice the content for the same price. And I think as we're seeing, all of us, everybody who's in the streaming business, utility, the amount of engagement, the amount of time a customer spends with the product is in fact increasing. And during these, you know, unfortunate moments we're going through right now with this pandemic, that's increasing dramatically. And so the performance of how somebody sees the value of a product like that is actually increasing as a result of that. So, you know, our job is to make sure the customer finds the value equation to be right. We've done that for over 30 million customers with HBO for a long period of time. And now our goal is to expand that out beyond the family. And I think we've got a really strong probability of doing that, making that happen.
Andrew.
Hey, John, it's great to see you this morning. And congratulations and good luck on this launch. The question, I have two questions. The biggest, I think, is a distribution question, which is, and maybe you can explain what's happened with the likes of Comcast, parent company of this network, Amazon, and Roku, which historically have been strong distribution partners for the HBO product, but are not on board, at least from what I understand at the moment, with HBO Max and what that does to your reach.
So we have a broad list of distributors who are working with us. Most of the traditional MVPD market is the pay TV market is actually signed on and is going to carry forward. They're going to be successful distributors with HBO Max, just like they were with HBO. And it's a long litany of providers that are doing that. Frankly, you mentioned your parent company. I'm optimistic that there's still an opportunity for something to be done there. And I suspect that, there's an opportunity that any other pay TV providers that aren't in, given the vast majority of the ecosystem has elected to come in and be distributors, will in fact become partners moving forward. I think the interesting dynamic that you're alluding to is Roku and Amazon at this point have elected not to be distributors. And I step back and I didn't expect that we would, first of all, have distribution across the entire base. I think we must be doing something right if somebody believes we're now starting to be more in conflict with their business. So I don't necessarily take that as a bad sign, but I do find it a bit ironic when I think back to the litigation that occurred prior to the Time Warner AT&T transaction closing, that the concern was about withholding content from traditional distributors. And what we have now is we actually have a dynamic where we have new distributors, new technology distributors from the digital age who are electing not to distribute the product. And I think that dynamic is an important one to understand. It just shows you how fast the markets are moving and how we have to respond to those changes.
Just to follow up with one other question which relates to this, which is speak to the marketing challenge, which I think there may be one, in terms of getting people to download the app, because some of these cable operators aren't going to necessarily be carrying it as an on-demand, on the box, if you will. So what has to happen, given that you do have these multiple brands, and getting people to understand that they need to actually go get this particular product?
It's a good question, Andrew. This today is not the finish line. Today is the start. And we're committed to this business and building this kind of a customer aggregation platform for the long haul. And so this is a progressive process of occurring. We're going to use all the tools in the toolbox to make that happen. Most importantly, we've got a huge base that we can already start to engage. And as they start to expose themselves to the content, we'll use every means we possibly can, including social dynamics of people finding something they like and then sharing it with friends and relatives and people that they work with. And the dynamic of making the awareness and driving it through the funnel and moving into free trial where somebody can explore it for a period of time, We think once somebody starts to engage with the product and the content that is there, it becomes a relatively straightforward dynamic to make that happen. The point is, it doesn't all happen in week one. It doesn't all happen in month one. It will happen over successive quarters. Our goal is to be at 50 to 55 million customers, you know, by the time we're out in 2025. We're not looking to turn the light switch on overnight. We're looking to build this platform domestically in the U.S. in a very deliberate fashion over time here. And we're confident we can do that using all the marketing tools available to us.
Hey, John, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about how the economy looks, at least through the prism of AT&T, what you've seen in terms of real-time subscriber, people cutting the cords, or others, DirecTV subscribers stepping off at the same time. You may be seeing an increase in the number of people who want that high-speed internet connection because they're working from home, doing school from home. What do you see, and how is it playing out? What are you anticipating over the next couple of months?
Becky, it's an evolving dynamic right now. It's moving pretty quickly, and I don't think anybody can sit here at this moment and not understand that for the next several quarters, we're going to see some suppression in this economy, and it's going to have an impact on a variety of different products and services. Even something as important as telecommunication services, you know, we're going to have people who start to make choices that are hard within their household budgets. What I can tell you is this: in the wireless space, we're seeing inbound activity level at the top of the funnel that's back to 2019 levels for our business. So the activity level, as we've seen reopening occur, distribution reopen, people starting to get back to normal, that inbound activity is actually back to 2019 levels. Now, there's the second part of that, which is what's happening to the base. And clearly there's some people falling out of the base from economic hardship in many instances. They can't afford to pay their bills. So the net is there's probably going to be some downward pressure in the wireless space, but we are seeing the top of the funnel activity levels start to recover and get back to historic levels. On broadband, it's a pretty similar story, although, you know, I'm actually seeing that as being a little bit stickier product right now, frankly, than even wireless. It's been a little bit more indispensable. Inbound volumes are starting to get back to what we saw in the 2019 level. Still got a little ways to go to recover. It's a little bit different experience in that oftentimes broadband requires a visit to a house. Some people aren't quite comfortable with that dynamic yet, but we're seeing it edge back to that level, and it's pretty close at this point. It's the pay TV business that's recovering the slowest. There's no question about it. Activity levels are not back to 2019 levels, and that probably makes sense given that typically that customer installation experience is oftentimes a visit to a house that's for an extended period of time, oftentimes a couple hours. And I think there's a lot of folks that just aren't comfortable with that yet, and it's going to take a little bit of time to come back in. Those that have the service, we're actually seeing a slowdown in churn right now. I mean, they're engaged with it, but that inbound activity has been a lot lower.
Hey, John, it's no ads right now. I'm just the whole business model, and I don't know whether I know you might be working on an ad-supported version. So I can just tell you through my experience. So I've been watching Peacock. And there's a lot of, like, date lines, okay? Because I haven't seen them all, so I need to see them all, I guess. I haven't minded the ads, and there's not as many, you know what I mean? So it's not like I'm sitting there for 3 minutes saying I hate it, but I get to get up, go get a grape soda. Sometimes, you know, after drinking too many grape sodas, I need to take a break, whatever. But is that in the works? I mean, that's not a bad way to go. Is that going to happen?
I think we have been really clear since the transaction was announced that we believe very strongly that the long-term dynamics are going to be both subscription and advertising supported. I mean, if we think about what consumers like, they like choice. They want a broad library of selection. And in fact, many of the streaming services that are so popular today were really built off of advertising dollars to start. We can't forget that. And those libraries, while they're strong and they're good, they don't last forever. After you've been through every episode of Seinfeld or Friends six times, eventually you do move on to something else. And so to have that replenishment occur at a price point that a consumer can long-term afford and still get that value of choice, you are going to need to have both subscription and ad-supported. And yes, we're committed to bringing out an ad-supported offering the early part of next year that will complement the subscription, no commercial part of our business. I think, to Joe, to your point is, you don't necessarily mind ads if they're executed well and they're relevant. And the nice part about where we are on technology and insights to customers, we can now start to do that. And that's the marriage of bringing media and distribution together. We have better insights about the customer. We have insights from the endpoints of the services that they have with us from our AT&T communications products, which helps us to inform a much better advertising platform that can be more targeted, more relevant, less intrusive, and make sure that that customer can support both monetization models that gives them the best choice possible in the product.
Hey, John, just keying off that particular point, I remember when we first spoke maybe a year and a half ago when you first announced HBO Max out in LA together, and the question I'd ask is this. This channel is very much the culmination of the AT&T marriage with Time Warner. So when you look back on that marriage and you look at what AT&T has brought to the table and what Time Warner has brought to the table, the question I'd ask is sort of what do you think is the result of that deal that's created this? Could have this been created on its own?
Oh, I think everything can always possibly be done organically. It's just a matter of time and money. Some of the factors that you raise early on in the conversation, which is, can you go in against established players and how much patience does it take and balance sheet strength? Those are all the pragmatic issues we have to deal with. And I tell you that it is going to be a pretty aggressive and intensely competitive space. So I think the heft of both companies coming together, the strength of AT&T's distribution, the 170 million direct consumer relationships we already have to help accelerate some of that new distribution, I think is going to, at the end of the day, be really important to this. And I don't think you have that great ad-supported opportunity unless you've got that intensive endpoints of insights from broadband distribution and wireless distribution, and insights from a pay TV business that tells you what customers want to watch and what affinities there are in a household. So I think you're now going to start to see where the bridging of distribution and content actually can build a better product and can bring value. It just has taken a little bit of time. I'd love to be a lot further along. Look, if you think about it, you think about the litigation, the waiting period during the keep separate agreement, it'd be wonderful to be 18 months back at this moment. That's where we could have been. Unfortunately, that's not the cards we have right now.
Hey, John, a huge success for Turner on with the match, which was, we don't get to see any sports, and it was golf. And there's another phenomenal golf property known as the AT&T Pebble Beach. And the reason I bring that up is that when we talked to Randall last time out there, Randall Stephenson, in February, he thought he'd serve out to the end of the year, and the whole transition was very orderly, but it did seem like it came, just taking over July 1st, that was a little earlier than we thought. What was there something with the pandemic, some thinking that went into that to get you in that position to deal with this? What was the thinking on Randall? I don't know whether he left early or whether it was just, not fixed in stone at the time, but we thought he would be serving as CEO throughout 2020.
Yeah, I think within the context of maybe my 34 years with the company and Randall's 36 plus years with the company, whether it happened, within a 3-month period of time or 6-month period of time, I think it's relatively speaking orderly either way. The reality is we sat here at a moment and said, now's the time. And whether it happened in July or happened in December, this is something that I think the board, Randall, everybody else around the company didn't just wake up this year and decide it was something they needed to deal with or think about. And the fact that there is that kind of planning, there is that kind of forethought, you sometimes get into these things and you pick your moment. And we're at a moment right now, partly because of the pandemic and the many decisions we're making and restructuring the business, partly because of where we are, I think the confidence of where the board is in this transition, and where Randall's comfort level is in handing over the reins, that this was the right time to do it. And I think, frankly, in the broader scheme of things, whether it was this quarter or two quarters from now, relatively speaking, isn't that big of a deal.
Yeah. I don't know what I might have said. No, that's all right, Randall. You go ahead. Let's take us in it. I don't know. Anyway, tough for everybody, but we're all trying to do the best we can, and we appreciate you being on today as well, John. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Next on Squawk Pod, pizza. Papa John's CEO Rob Lynch on the strong performance of no-contact delivery.
We think that there is going to be a tail to this. We do think that there is going to be a delay in consumer behavior, wanting to go back out for sit-down dinners, and we're going to be able to benefit from that.
We'll be right back. This is Squawk Pod with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Andrew.
Let's talk about, well, I think it's probably maybe all of our favorite foods. I don't know. Let's talk pizza during the pandemic. Papa John's announcing some staggering new numbers this morning. Comparable store sales, ready for this? For the month of May are up more than 33% in North America. That's after being up 27% in April. It all adds up to the two best months in the company's history. And for more on where we are and where we're going, we're joined by Bob Lynch, president and CEO of Papa John's International. Good morning to you. It was a remarkable 2 months, and in large part, given this pandemic, I think the real question I'd ask you as someone who's running a business is, I think you were a beneficiary, I hate to say it, of the pandemic. And the question really is this just pulled forward, or how do you sustain this kind of momentum as a business?
Hi, thanks for having me on today. You know, the results that we've shown in the second quarter have really been built on a foundation that we were building in the first quarter before the pandemic hit. We were up over 7% heading into March when coronavirus impacted our sales negatively for the back half of March, taking our same store sales down to about 5% for the quarter. So we were already on a good track. We had built a lot of new innovation that we had launched in February. We had gotten a lot of things turned around on our advertising, our marketing, our media spends. So a lot of foundational things were put in place, and you know, we reacted to the pandemic in, I think, a really strong way. Our team came together across the company with our franchisees, and we put a plan in place because it was really important for us to be able to support our communities by, you know, through our model, which is all about delivery and takeout. We had seen the pandemic sweeping across Asia and into Europe, and we knew what it looked like. We knew what in the markets where we were allowed to operate, the kind of performance we needed to deliver to make sure that we were able to meet the need for safe, high quality food. And so we built that. We launched no contact delivery in late March. We started communicating with our customers, sharing with them that they could order our high quality, safe food delivered with no contact directly to their homes. And we think that's made a big difference. But we see this sales trend, we see this performance that it's going to be sustainable. We're seeing markets that are opening up in the states, different, you know, Tennessee, Texas, Georgia. We saw very strong performance in May, despite the fact that, you know, they created a little bit of leniency in their quarantining rules. So we think this is going to stick around long after coronavirus.
Well, the question I was going to ask you, in states where there has been a little bit of reopening, have you even seen a shift in terms of the mix? Pickup versus delivery, for example, things like that?
No, you know what? It's interesting. We haven't seen that much of a shift even during coronavirus in most states. Obviously, in New York and some of these other very hard, very high impact states and cities, we have seen, you know, delivery go to, you know, upwards of 90%. But in a lot of states, people have still left their homes to come and pick it up because they wanted that that ability to control, you know, their how they receive the food. But since the opening up in, like I said, in Georgia, Tennessee, Dallas, Nashville, Atlanta are growing as faster in May as they were in April. So we think that there is going to be a tail to this. We do think that there's going to be a delay in consumer behavior, wanting to go back out for dinner, sit down dinners. And we're going to be able to benefit from that. But like I said, I think the foundation of this sales growth is really grounded in our innovation, launching new products, We've created a strong loyalty program over the last year that's having a big impact. And then our partnership with the aggregators has really been strong for us as well. We're seeing a lot of incremental new customers coming in through those channels.
So the other question, though, that I was going to ask you is, in terms of what this looks like 12 months from now, you have no worries that once people are truly out and about, I mean, I don't know if we'll be out 12 months from now. I hope we are, but that on the other side of it, it's going to be a much tougher business.
Yeah, there's no denying that coronavirus is having an impact on our business, a positive impact on our business. It's eliminated a lot of the other options. So I'm not trying to say that, you know, 33% of this growth is all things we've done. I'm just trying to say that we think there is strong growth that lies beyond. Obviously, none of us know how long this terrible pandemic is going to impact our country, impact the globe. But we've built a model that we think is going to continue to help us drive growth ongoing.
Tell us about employee wages. Have you had to increase wages? What's happened there?
You know, we've tried to focus our company on things that we think are going to be most helpful for people, for our employees during this time of need. We've implemented a lot of new safety and sanitization protocols. We've also increased some of the health benefits that we offer. We've extended virtual doctor's visits to all of our employees, regardless of whether or not they've signed up for health insurance or not. We also offer free college tuition for employees, for eligible employees that work more than 20 hours a week. So we've focused on making investments in the long-term future versus necessarily giving short-term pay increases that we have to then take away when we get back to normal and things get back to normal. So we're trying to do everything we can to keep our employees safe, keep our employees engaged and fulfilled, and then also help them feel great about coming to work every day.
Hey, Rob, I just wonder, did you see a real change in where your busiest locations were? I would imagine college campuses or Papa John's near college campuses would be some of the busiest places until they shut down all the schools. How did you kind of handle the change in which stores were maybe being used the most frequently? And did you even see that sort of a shift?
Yeah, we absolutely saw that shift. In fact, our fastest growing market is New York City, you know, where people have really depended on our teams to bring them safe food. And so the college campuses absolutely have definitely changed their trajectory. And you know, the urban environments that have been the most hard hit have actually been the fastest growing. But, you know, we've had to implement the same procedures in New York City as we've had to implement in, you know, South Bend, Indiana. We got to make sure that all of our restaurants are safe for people to continue to come to work. We got to make sure that our employees feel like they can come to work every day and feel good about where they're at. So the procedures have been the same. We did transition, as I mentioned, to no contact delivery. That's been a huge win for both our employees and our customers. We're seeing our customer service scores go up dramatically, about 1,000 basis points. And where we deliver with no contact delivery. Customers appreciate us going the extra effort, putting in the extra effort and going the extra mile to deliver in that way and keep them safe and keep our employees safe.
Rob, it's great to see you. Congratulations on your success, and we hope to talk to you again soon and check in on your progress. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
You
very much.
Squawk Pod will be right back. That's the podcast for today. On our rundown tomorrow, Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook CEO on social media's role in a pandemic, everything from supporting small businesses to working with the White House. You don't want to miss this conversation. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Tweet us at Squawk CNBC, and thanks for listening. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.